Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Vote for me! Vote for me! Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with longtime NHL superstar Russ Cortinel. On the show today, this is the week of the election, so I'm not sure the time when we... This will be aired after the election, but we're going to talk to... We've got to talk to Russ about that. Bobby Orr got in some hot water. Should hockey players and athletes get into politics? We'll check on that. Cool story. John Lester with the Chicago Cubs. Looks like he's not going to re-sign. Did an amazing thing for all the fans. And I want to ask Russ what's the most generous thing he's ever heard. The Ontario Hockey League is starting, going to start up. Should they have body checking or not? The Premier's going back and forth on this thing. I think it's ridiculous. The NHL, Bettman had a little statement. We want to start January 1st, and we want to end before the Summer Olympics and hand out the NHL. So let's get some stuff on that. And also, a surprise for you, Rusty.
Oh, really?
Larry Robinson is going to join us next week for the show.
Oh, nice. Big Bird.
Yeah, long time, unbelievable career with the Montreal Canadiens, and then went on to be a great coach. How about you, Rusty? By the way, if you want to email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. We get a bunch. Love to talk about them. How about you, Rusty? How was the week? What's going on? What are you doing? You said you got a new bar or something? You just sent me a picture.
Yeah, Paris redid our bar, so I'm sitting in front of it. It's pretty damn nice. Had to send you a picture. It's all glass shells with metal rods hanging down, so.
Yeah. I'm guessing, Russ, I see the amount of wine you drink a week. I'm guessing she reinforced it with concrete.
That's behind me.
You got to stick with that woman. She made you a new bar.
Yeah, she's great.
Unreal.
She also expanded the patio outside so my Peloton could fit out there.
Yeah, with the cigars.
So she's, you know, half fun. She's got the bar and then the Peloton station. So
nothing like a new bar. There's nothing like it.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Love it. So some guy kept calling me thinking I was you. Okay. Mm-hmm. This guy, Tim Wormsby, longtime writer. I think he was with the Globe for many years, sports guy. And he said, hey, Russ, I want to talk to you about the 2002 Olympics. I said, I'm not Russ.
I talked to him yesterday. So Tim is writing a book about the 2002 gold medal hockey team, Canada. And Wayne Gretzky, he interviewed Wayne, he interviewed Bob Nicholson. And they shared the story of picking the coach. And I was involved with picking the coach. And
really?
Bob flew down to L.A., and Wayne invited me to play golf. And I said, I'm longtime friends with Bob Nicholson back from BC Junior or BC Hockey Association. Dave Andrews was in that program. And then he coached me in Victoria when I played Major Junior. Anyways, Bob Nicholson and I have known each other for a long time. So Wayne goes, would you just come along golf and hear what Bob has to say and, you know, just hang out. So I was just there as a buddy and I said to Wayne, I go, when you meet Bob, you're going to love him, man. He's one of us. He's a great guy.
Right. Head of Hockey Canada at the time.
Yeah, he's the president. And he was coming down to convince Wayne to be the general manager, executive director, whatever his role was, and also decide on the coach. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a two-pronged deal. And they laid out the coaching choices, and I helped. And so they gave me credit. And so that's why Tim went to interview me to hear the story, my side of the story. And it was pretty cool.
So how did you pick the coach? Tell us about that process. How did it work? Are you all in the room together? Are you interviewing guys live or on the phone or what? How'd that all go down?
So when they first hired Wayne, my understanding was they wanted to pick the coach. And Wayne says, I'm not going to be involved enough, so I picked the coach. So Bob came back with four choices, and Wayne said, that's fair. So he had to pick from four coaches. And so I had played for Pat Quinn, and my brother had played for Pat Quinn in Vancouver, and he was mostly my general manager there. But I love Pat. He's a man's man. And I told Wayne and I told Bob, I said, you've got every superstar from they're the best players from their teams in the NHL. You know, they're all obviously all Canadians, as is every other country's team. So I said, you've got to have somebody in charge they're going to listen to. Because, you know, you go from the first line in Detroit to playing a fourth line role with Team Canada, because that's how it works. And you've got to be able to sell that superstar that we really need him on the fourth line or third line or second line and in a different role. And it's not easy. The one guy out of the four that they put up, I said, Wayne, everybody in the room is going to respect and they're going to love playing for Pat Quinn because he's a man's man. And when he gets upset, they're going to listen. And that's my opinion and my brother's opinion and probably anybody who ever played for Pat. So Wayne picked Pat, and that was it. That was it. And then what was really cool was later Pat had no idea. So later
they didn't go with Mark Crawford.
he wasn't even on the short list. The long list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And so, anyways, we're in Calgary for the World Junior Championships, and they brought back all the captains for the World Juniors Canadian past teams. So I was my year I was the captain. So we all came back. We had a great time watching the Canadian juniors play and junior team play in the tournament. And we had a thing afterwards at the keg. We're all around the bar and Bob Nicholson's there and Pat. And so he calls Pat over and he goes, hey Pat, you know, have you heard the story about how you got picked to be the coach? And he goes, well, I just assumed I was the guy and you guys picked me. And he goes, no, there's more to it. And he told Pat the story. And Pat put out his hand, shook my hand, put his arm around me and kind of gave me one of those bear hugs that he can give because he was a massive human being. Yeah. Anyways, that's what I got interviewed about with Tim.
Who, Russ, got to ask you then, who were the other three guys who were on the slate to be picked?
So it was Joel Quenneville. Jeff, I called Jeff about him at that time, and he thought he was just starting out as a head coach and said, he's an excellent coach. I just don't think he's ready yet. I think he's too young.
Right.
So Jacques from Ottawa, Jacques Martin.
Oh, sure.
So, and then the other one was Ken Hitchcock.
Right. Of course, he's always in the fold.
Yeah. So those were the four choices. And then they went with Quinn, and then Ken and Jacques were assistant coaches, so they got picked. So that, you know, it wasn't horrible. They both went. I don't think Joel was there. I don't think they took Joel as a third coach.
Were you asked, Russ, to sort of be involved after that? To be,
No, I wasn't. But you know what? I did ask. I asked Wayne. I go, why don't you just create a role for me? I'll go as the media guy. I'll do anything like. And, you know, just to go and experience.
Pour the wine.
Wayne didn't, you know, he did everything. He hired everyone who was in the NHL, who was a professional at what they were doing. So he didn't bring along his golf buddy and take somebody's position. That's probably why he didn't pick me to do anything. But I had a chance to go with friends. They had tickets and I said, nah, I'm just going to stay here and watch it on TV. But, I did want to go in some capacity, but I wasn't working in hockey. So I'm assuming that's why I didn't get picked. Cause I told Wayne, I go, I'll be the media guy.
Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, it doesn't have to be anything.
I'll be anything.
Yeah.
Now you're getting the exact feeling, Russ, of what I always say to Wayne about anything.
Yeah.
Bring me along, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, every time the 2002 Olympics is mentioned, I was working in radio at the time, Russ, when that was on, and it got very controversial, right? Wayne ended up having a press conference at the end, which was totally against his style, calling out the American press and stuff about them talking down about the Canadian team. And I get a lot of calls that week, those 2 weeks from Wayne going, what's going on up there? Is everything cool? You know, and this is before any sort of a bunch of social media. I said, you're doing fine, pal. Everyone's all jacked up about it. And of course, at the time, those Olympics are in ratings. Okay. Radio ratings. I was doing the show and the boss said, okay, you guys got to work on the Sunday of mm-hmm. the gold medal game.
Right.
I said, no, I'm not. And Stevie, our producer we worked together at that time. And he said, yes, you are. I said, no, you can't do that. He goes, just, you're in there. You're going to, I said, look, we can't even talk about the game, right? There's a big restriction, right, Russ? You can't talk about someone else's broadcast on a live broadcast.
Oh,
right?
No. Okay.
So I said, what are we going to do? You know, and I said, no one's going to be listening to a radio show. Every person in Canada is going to be watching the game. And anyway, he said, you got to do it. So off we went and we kept watching the game on the monitor, but we weren't allowed to repeat any play. There's a pretty strict guideline there, what you're allowed to do about repeating a broadcast. And so the host of the show was trying to make it go. And Stevie and I were just sitting there watching the game, right? And then we went to break and he said, come on, you guys, cut me some slack here. You know, throw me a bone. We got to do a show. As it ended up, tons of people are driving around listening to it on radio. And we had this great show. And then, of course, at the end of the show, when they win, I'm crying. And, you know, they're showing Wayne and they won this thing. And I've got about seven different phone numbers for them at that time. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they win, my phone rings and I look at it and it says, we're on air. And it says, Wayne, Salt Lake City. Right? And I'm going, what the freaking? And so I answer it. And I'm going, it must be his dad or someone, or he lent his phone to some. So I answer the phone. I'm looking at the monitor with 40 million people and his phone's to his ear. And I go, hello. And he goes, what'd you think of that one, James? How was that? And the host of our show was sharp enough to sort of bring everyone up to speed. And he ended up phoning us immediately. And then he said, well, put me on air. I said, you got to phone back, right? You're on your cell phone. And he did. And we did a quick 2 or 3 minute interview with Wayne even before the anthem. And so I always remember that. I mean,
yeah, I remember that too. And the media went nuts. They were like, who was Wayne talking to when he won? And I remember it was the far end of the bench, closest to center ice. And he was walking on to the ice with the phone in his ear. I totally remember it. I can remember it like yesterday. And I probably even said the same thing. I wonder who he's calling.
Yeah. So did Bob Cole. He's going, who's he calling? His dad's here. Everyone's here. Who's he calling?
That's probably why I remember it, because Bob Cole was calling it.
Yeah. So anyway, they win. Big party down in the market where our radio station was. And then I blast off to a house party. These are my blurry days, Russ. And so I get whipped up and I'm embarrassed to say, but I was driving home and my phone rings that night, later on that night. And you know, hello. And she's like, this is so-and-so from the Ottawa Sun. And I said, oh yeah, what's up? You know? And she said, am I to understand that phone call that I saw Wayne making, that was to you? and I said, yeah, it wasn't. She says, there's a pause and she goes, why would he phone you?
Oh my God.
And I said, well, that's a good question, you know, and I don't know if I have the answer for it, but because he's my friend.
Yeah.
You know, and she said, come on. I said, he is, you know, and he invited me to go, but the radio station wouldn't let me go. And so she said, what do you mean he's your friend? I said, well, he is. We're longtime friends. He's one of my longest friends as an adult. I met him in 85 when I moved here and he was just wanted to include me in the game. I almost choke up now when I talk about it. Yeah. He just wanted me to be a part of it because I wasn't allowed to go. And, you know, typical of him. And so she wrote a big article on it the next day and saying, you know, I forget what the headline, I don't even have the article, but it was like, Gretzky takes time out for a good friend, you know, to include him in the deal. And then I'm doing daytime talk shows the next day, Russ. I went down to like the noon show on TV. And anyway, it was a spectacular moment, that whole thing. And did you, Russ, have anything to do after you helped pick the coach? And it sounds like they went with your pick. Did you have anything to do with picking players?
Well, no, I did not. But Wayne did ask me my opinion on Ed Jovanovski and Al McGinnis. And I think he, I think it was coming down to between the two of them for
how do
the last.
You pick? Can we dig both?
Yeah. I think because, you know, Joe at 2002, Joe was a young, you know, young defenseman. And then you got McGinnis, who would have been at the end of his career. And I remember having that, pretty sure we had that conversation on what did he said, what do you think?
Oh,
and,
cool.
And so, yeah, we talked about the last kind of pick for a defenseman.
Right. Did Al McGinnis really, did he really have a piercing slap shot? Like,
God.
Guys afraid to get in front of that? Was it that much faster than other guys' shots? Harder?
Hey, goalies were afraid to get in front of that. Oh my God. The guy had an absolute cannon. And
how could he fire a puck?
He's
harder than other guys in the NHL.
I asked him, we were during the lockout, we went to Europe with Wayne.
Yeah.
And that tour, that the 99 All-Stars tours.
Right.
And then Wayne, so I hung out with Al a lot and Steve Larmer, the three of us, Todd Gill, none of us had our wives on the trip. So we were always hanging out. A lot of guys brought their wives or girlfriends. So anyways, we hung out a lot and I asked Al, I asked him that question, like, your shot is amazing. You got a hard shot. Like, why is it? And he goes, well, I used to practice and I used to shoot the side of my barn all the time. I shot pucks. Mm-hmm. And then he had this crazy, it wasn't a curve. It was a bend on his stick.
Right.
And that, I think the combination, he was a strong guy. He practiced as a kid all the time. And then he had this bend in his stick that made his shot go that much harder than anybody else.
Oh,
but
cool.
those three things were what, you know, made his shot.
Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind that hockey stick manufacturers must have wanted to get inside that guy's head, you know.
It was an absolute cannon. I just couldn't believe he could pass the puck with that stick because it was bent. Like if he stood at the blue line and put his puck or his stick down looking at the goal, the blade was pointing at the left corner because
wow,
it was bent like that. It was crazy.
In picking that team, in picking an Olympic team, and everyone weighs in, right? Everyone's they love it, right? They're like, who's it gonna pick? And you're waiting for the day the team's gonna be named. And there will always be the odd guy in there that people, you know, the majority of people go, What?
Yeah.
That guy. And so I talked to Wayne one time about that. He said, well, I'll tell you what, it's kind of the nasty part of picking an Olympic team, but there's politics, whether you like it or not. And we live in a bilingual country and you got to make sure that it's inclusive. Right. And that was back then, right? Today, of course, it would have to be more, even with the awareness of it. But so it makes it very difficult. Right. Very difficult to make sure you include French Canadians and English, of course. Anyway, that's a great story, Russ. That's awesome.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
Anyway, speaking of politics, Russ, moving along to a couple of topics. Bobby Orr, a few days ago, puts out an ad, places an ad supporting Donald Trump. Which in my mind is fine, and for obvious reasons, right? It's the kind of the week of, you always see this, the week before the federal election, that the celebs will come forward with their support. They don't say very much. Jack Nicklaus did the same thing.
Yeah.
Came out with a print ad, I think, saying, I support Donald Trump, and people went ballistic.
Russ. Unbelievable, yeah.
Cam Cole, who's a writer in Canada, I think he's kind of retired now, but he was a longtime writer, I think for the Sun chain or one of the major newspaper chains. And he dropped a tweet the other day saying, these were my two biggest heroes. He's a fanatic golfer and he was a prolific hockey writer.
Yeah.
And Bobby Orr and Jack Nicklaus were his two biggest heroes. And he said, they're out. Ouch. I can't do it. And a lot of people said that I'm taking the jersey down. I'm I'll never speak of the guy again. And so there was a lot of volleying back and forth, but that was a popular opinion, Russ. And I want to know your thoughts on that. First of all, Russ, politics and athletes, what should they get involved? Shouldn't they? Are they allowed to? Are they not allowed to? Or can everyone just piss off and they can do whatever they want?
I just, to me, that the hatred that goes with whatever side you're on. Mm-hmm. And I had a disagreement with a friend who wrote something about Bobby Orr, and I sent him I didn't go on social media and hit him. I sent him a separate direct message. And I'm like, I showed him a video of Joe Biden and the sexual harassment that he, you know, was accused of and all this stuff. And I just said, like, because he said something about moral Bobby, questioning Bobby Orr and his moral compass because he likes Trump. And then I just sent him this thing I saw on Instagram, and I sent it to him, and I said, hey, you know, check this out, moral compass, you know, like, but the media won't, the left-leaning media is, their guy is Biden. And so they're not putting a lot of this stuff out. And I just felt like it was really unfair to hammer Bobby, who I love and I've met a few times. The guy calls my freaking son on his birthday because agency is owned by the Bobby Orr Group. And he called him to cheer him up or cheer him on. And you know, this is freaking Bobby Orr. I mean, calling all these kids that they represent. And I've had many conversations with Bobby and never talked about politics. So this was the first experience I had, like you did and everybody else. And why, you know, you disown somebody because they're of the other party. I mean, it's just, to me, is crazy. I don't know. But I, you know, LeBron James, I've said some things about him on the show where I just don't like it when he's, you know, he's an active player and he's saying all this shit. Michael Jordan said somebody
like Black Lives Matter stuff. You mean
with just about Trump. He just can't stand Trump. He's all about, you know, Hillary. And then he was with Hillary. Now he's with Biden. Like he's a Democrat. So, you know, he's just bashing when he can.
Right.
But, I think guys like him should be quiet. That's my opinion. He's playing.
Right.
So Michael Jordan, I read somebody hammered him for not backing a Democrat in his home state years ago. And he goes, hey, Republicans buy Nikes too.
Yeah, let's get real for a second. Yeah, let's get real. I'll read you some of the stuff that we got on our Facebook page, by the way, which we have, the Suspendables. Who really cares who he endorses? He is still a fantastic person, great representative for the game of hockey. All politicians are liars, cheats, and useless. My personalized Bobby Orr jersey came off the wall. Will not be listening anymore. That's Sparky Gregory. Rick T. Bears says, that's the problem with the world. You post, say, write your thoughts, and you get condemned for it. Guess everybody is supposed to have the same opinion. It's a good one. F off Montreal Gazette, because that's the guy who wrote the story. Who cares what someone's political stance is? Bobby Orr is the greatest defenseman of all time. There's another one here. President Trump has delivered for all the American people, regardless of race, gender, or station in life. I don't know where you've been the last 4 years, Mr. Orr, but I believe you should stick to endorsing hockey and only hockey. Dave writes us, funny you should post that. I throw up in my mouth a little bit every time Russ talks about how he supports Trump. We were never going to do this, Russ. We were never going to do it. I stopped listening to the podcast because of it. He has every right to support who he wants, and I certainly can decide not to listen. Number 6 was my favorite player on the Habs back in the day. Not so much now. No person with proper values in this day and age can support Trump.
Wow. Well, there you go. There you go. I mean, listen, my wife is a Democrat and I can't vote in the United States. So, I'm a Canadian. And I just, it's my, what I see and what's going on is, and I'm just talking about what I see through Russ's eyes. And,
And I've met a lot of smart people as the politicians say, both sides of the aisles. And right. I have a very good close friend down here, and he totally disagrees with what I see. He doesn't see.
Right.
And so that's the part I don't get. Like I just don't get when you can see results and then somebody doesn't see the exact same results. I'm like, but those are facts.
Right. Right.
And so, anyways, I can't.
If you were Bobby or Jack Nicklaus, would you have done the same thing?
So I think they have every right to, and that's what's great about a democracy. And I think that people have died in wars so that we are able to have these discussions, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican in this country. And to disown somebody for a view that they have is ridiculous. I mean, to hate somebody that much because they don't believe what you believe is crazy to me.
Well, it's such a hard stance, right? It's such a hard stance, right? And that email I just read, or that post by that guy, you know, I've always said, look, you know, it's okay to have expectations, Russ, on people, right? You can expect that. You might expect that Russ is going to vote for Trump. You might not like that, but you can't put a demand on the expectation. You just can't say, if you don't do that, Russ, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to listen to your You got nowhere to go with ultimatums.
It's called communism.
Yeah, right? And so,
Believe like the media in the United States, let's face it, 90% of the media are Democrats or left leaning, right? So they want to put their spin on, and they don't cover. Like, I just think that it'd be really cool if there was a new media company that would start or take over one of these old ones and just report the frickin' news and let everybody decide, like, instead of picking sides and going like, come on, like, just report the freaking news.
Yeah, there's a political scientist in Canada who I saw a piece on yesterday. I don't have his name. And he's a fact checker. Okay.
Okay.
And he's the go-to guy. He's the go-to guy. And he's doing exactly what you want. Exactly what you want. Whether it's Trump or whoever else is Biden.
Exactly.
But this stuff where they're going, okay, so everyone's going, I'm ripping my jersey down.
Yeah,
you better be careful, pal. Okay, you better be careful that you're taking this hard stance against Bobby Orr. Let's have a look at your life, okay? Let's have a look at is that a plastic water bottle you're carrying? You prick, nothing for the, you know what I mean? You could go on and on about
it. I know. It's judging. But hey, if you guys are getting rid of those jerseys, send them our way.
Yeah. We'll come and take it down for you.
We'll pay for the shipping.
Exactly. Let's call his bluff.
And send his rookie card with it.
Yeah. How about this one, Russ? If you don't like Bobby Orr, then you can't sell it. You know, you can't make money off Bobby. Don't forget you don't like him anymore, right? Yeah. Good one, Rusty. Good one. Okay, a couple other things. God, this was a great show. Love this stuff.
Hey, actually, send it to your address, and then we'll give it away as a prize.
There we go.
Everybody who doesn't want to have Jack Nicklaus, any of his stuff, or Bobby Orr's, send it to Suspendables, and we'll put it up as a prize.
Because you, of course, you being a non-fan of Bobby, you would never make money off him, would you? Good one. Yeah,
I got that. I got a signed Gordie Howe stick in my garage.
Oh, you really?
So during the lockout, he came and played with the West. So we had a West Ontario team and Quebec team and an American team. So we had four teams. We played 3-on-3 in Hamilton. And Gordie Howe, who played in the West, came out and skated with us, and he needed a stick. So he looked at mine. He goes, this is the closest thing to my stick. So he cut the stick and taped it the way he taped his stick.
Yeah.
He had this really cool knob. And then he came up to me after and he said, hey, thank you very much for letting me use the stick. This might be the last time I ever skate. I don't know when I'm ever going to skate again. He goes, you never know, kid. One day this might be worth something. I'm going to sign it for you. And
you got to be kidding me.
Wow. Yeah. So I've got this, my stick, But he used it and cut it and signed it for me. So it's kind of cool.
So the league, Bettman, makes a little statement. They want to start January 1st, Russ. Mm-hmm. They want to have a minimum of a 48-game schedule. They want to hand out the Stanley Cup sometime in July before the Summer Olympics start. He's saying something like that is going to work. What do you think, Rusty? This is kind of obviously a COVID thing, because the NHL did a fantastic job on pulling off the playoffs, don't you think, with the bubble?
I think the NHL did a great job. I hope that the other leagues kind of copied what they did, because they've done, I think all the sports have done a really good job, but I think hockey led the way. I really do. I think whoever was in charge of producing those games made us fans feel like there was no change.
Right.
And for the players, obviously it was different, but for us fans, it was great. And you're watching football and even, you know, I think baseball didn't initially. I didn't like
NBA,
baseball,
yeah,
and then NBA. But initially, I didn't. I saw baseball. I'm like, that doesn't look good. And then I don't know if they changed the camera angles or what, but hockey did a great job. I applaud the NHL, the head office, producers. Mm-hmm. The fact that nobody tested positive was amazing.
Right. On the heels of that story, the Ontario Hockey League. Premier Ford, they've been batting back and forth. When I couldn't believe when they started to float this saying, we're going to have hockey games, but there'll be no body checking. I don't know if you saw that, Russ.
I saw that. My son Lawton told me about it.
I think it's like a joke. Yeah. I think it's like a joke. I think it's like, I was saying yesterday talking about it. This sounds like it'd be a skit on Saturday Night Live. Okay. COVID restrictions, but we're going to let you play hockey. I don't think the junior ranks, Russ, have the resources to pull off what the NHL did.
You know what they should? You know what they should do if they want to go down that road is they should play 3-on-3. And the reason they should play 3-on-3 is you'll have no hitting, one, if that's what they want, and two, when guys get sick because they're going to get it, then they don't need a full roster to play in the games.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So just have a 3-on-3 and it's entertaining. You're not going to have the big hits. You're not going to have the fights.
Right.
So you accomplish that. But also fans, we already know, love 3-on-3 hockey. So do it. And then when kids get injured or sick, you know what? You don't need a full roster.
We're making news here. We're making news. This is a great idea.
From 12 listeners to 16 because we lost Dave. We lost Dave in Quebec.
Yeah, we lost Dave. Yeah. And you remembered him. Yeah, we lost Dave. He throws up in his mouth, Russ, every time you mention something.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Russ, I want to talk about this before we leave. This is one of the coolest things I've ever heard of in a long time. And I want you to think about what was the most generous thing you've ever seen an athlete do. This story is John Lester, a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs, who it looks like he's run out, his time's done in Chicago. And he put out a tweet to thank all the fans in Chicago. And he loved them and said, thank you very much. It's the experience of my life. And then he goes on, he says, here's the name of 4 or 5 bars in Chicago. And they're all listed in his tweet. Okay. Listen to this. Okay. He says, between October 31st and the end of November 1st, you go to any of these bars and you have a beer and you say it's on me.
Okay. Really?
He runs a tab, Russ, okay, between all these joints, and he ends up buying 5,000 beers.
Jeez.
Isn't that a great story?
That's a great story.
Isn't
that's
that awesome. The best?
And you know, on top of that, the restaurants and bars are struggling through this pandemic. So,
brilliant.
You know what? It's a double whammy, right? The owners and the bartenders and the waiters, they win because they're getting people to come in.
Sure. And healthy tips, apparently. You gave away a bunch of tips, you know, to everyone.
Well, and I'm sure the people getting free beers were tipping too, right? Because they're not they're not paying for it. So they're hopefully they gave some money to their servers. So I think that's a great, great idea. Hopefully White Claw sponsored them.
Yeah. But in your time, Russ, I've seen some great stories. I remember going to the bar with Mess. I've told this before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're there for 5 minutes. Right. Yeah. And he says, let's beat it. Mess was just on the move all the time. And he said, give me the bill. And, you know, we had a beer and, the guy brings in the bill and I look at it. I catch it on my eye. I go, well, there must be a thing. $780, right? This bill. And I go, that's wrong. He goes, no, it's right. Yeah, I bought everyone a beer. How about you, Russ, in all your time there? Can you must have some great stories about surprise things that players, there's a beautiful side to athletes, man, the stuff they do for autographs and pictures and all that sort of stuff and visiting hospitals and on and on and on.
Well, I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to go to a musician.
Perfect.
So Sarah Vaughn, my mother-in-law, famous jazz singer, did a show at the Blue Note in New York. And then she was supposed to do an appearance at the Palladium. And the Palladium, it was a bar that was a church that was converted to a bar in New York. And she showed up at midnight. There was like 2,000 people in there to see her, and a promoter had put it all together. Sarah Vaughn's coming tonight. And she pulled up in her limousine and she said, what are we doing here? And they said, this is where the bar is. Studio 54, it might've been.
Oh, well, sure.
It was either Palladium or Studio 54. Anyway, so she says, what are we doing here? And the promoter says, well, this is the bar. And she goes, that's a church. And he goes, no, it's a bar. I use a church. It was a church, but it's a bar now. She goes, I'm not going in there. You can't go. That's sacrilegious. I'm not going in there. He goes, there's like 2,000 people in there waiting to see you. And she goes, I'll tell you what. You pull that hot dog stand out over here. And you go in there and tell the entire bar that if they want to meet me and see me, line up from the bar out to the limo, they can come in six at a time, have a drink with me, a hot dog, and then go back in the bar.
Come on.
And she stayed in the limo till every person in the bar got to meet her and hang out with her for a second.
Unreal.
That's cool.
That's so cool.
And I never met Sarah, but she was so freaking cool. I mean, she hung with the boys and sang with the angels. I mean, she was just an amazing woman.
That's absolutely super cool.
So, but with athletes, I mean, there's been so many cool things. I mean, Knuckles Nyland, I believe, started the Christmas NHL teams started going to sick kids hospital
right
at Christmas time and handing out gifts. I truly believe it was Knuckles Nyland in Montreal that started it. I'd never heard of it until I got to Montreal, and he would go to all these toy stores and companies and get them to donate. And then we would roll in with all these gifts and go room to room and give kids gifts and, you know, sign stuff. And so, right, you know, he was a big, tough, mean guy, but he had a big, kind heart for these sick kids, and he did a wonderful job. And now every team in the league, I believe, does it.
Right. Russ, did you have a chance ever, before we go, I want to ask you, not a great week here in Edmonton, the passing away of Joey Moss, who most people would know him around the world, never mind in Canada, who was Wayne Gretzky's girlfriend at the time, Vicky Moss. It's her brother, Joey, with Down syndrome. And Wayne set Joey up when he met Vicky. Joey Moss died this week at 57 years old. And he was working in a bottle depot when Wayne first met him, like 10 hours a day. It took his, you know, he had to ride the bus there and back. And he hated the job. And it was Wayne who went to the Oilers and said, can we give this guy a gig in the dressing room? And say there was the GM and coach at the time. He said, absolutely, absolutely. And that's how things started with the famous Joey Moss. And as Wayne said, it took him about a year to to sort of learn the ropes under the tutelage of Sparky, Lyle Kulchinski, the great equipment manager, and Barry Stafford. And then he sort of found his way, and he ended up being a locker room attendant there for all these years, for all these years. And then, and of course, Dwayne Manjusiak is the equipment guy with the Eskimos, and Joey ended up working there. And I really want to, I know Dwayne very well, and I know Sparky, and those guys were absolutely devoted, devoted to Joey. And then Wayne, as friend at the friend, and now, and then business associate later on, Ian Berrigan, they started the first Winifred house here for kids to live with Down syndrome. And Joey ended up living there on his own. And, you know, it was a fabulous story. It's an amazing story about Joey Moss. Did you ever meet him, Russ? You must've been around him a little bit.
A little bit. I, you and I, obviously got to hear him sing, ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Yeah,
La Bamba's his big
La Bamba. At Gretzky's fantasy camp. I saw him at the rink. My brother Jeff, who won a cup with Wayne and Edmonton, would have obviously spent lots of time with Joey, but I didn't realize Joey didn't always work for Edmonton. I thought that's Wayne met him when he played there, but that's really cool that Wayne got him the job. And I knew the relationship, brother sister relationship. I didn't know that, but I didn't spend a lot of time. But everybody knows Joey. He's one of those characters where
in the anthem, right?
Yeah, but everybody in the NHL knew Joey. I mean, any player who ever played in the NHL, if you mentioned Joey Moss, they'd say the trainer for the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, Wayne used to date his sister, and he he has special needs. Big smile, and just what a great human being, and what a nice thing for Wayne to do, and not surprising. I mean, yeah, Wayne's background with that, with his was it his aunt or his grandmother?
Well, Wayne had the reason. So Ian Berrigan, his brother had Down syndrome, and that's how. So Ian sort of knew it, knew about the life that these people have and what they had to do, and that's why when they set up those houses here in Edmonton, and Wayne's aunt, Ellen,
Wayne's aunt, right?
Ellen, yeah, Ellen. So they had this, you know, long time connection with special needs people, and anyway, we want to sort of devote the end of the show to Joey and some other shout outs that we got, Rusty. Then we'll get out of here. Janice Bramhill. These are people that have been emailing us or weighing in on Twitter and stuff.
Can I cut in for a shout out? My first shout out.
Absolutely.
Dave, I'd like to shout out.
You know, the problem is, Russ, apparently he won't hear the shout out anymore.
I know, yeah. But everybody else will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that a boy, Rusty. That's how you handle that. Janice Bramhill, Tom Goudreau, thanks a lot. Sparky Gregory, I think I read his little thing later, or earlier, his post. Holly Camden, Dave Hemming, Daniel LeDuc, and Perry Blanchard, a longtime buddy of mine from here. I couldn't even read his email. It was so laced with a tirade. And Craig Marlowe, thanks a lot to all those people. And thanks to all you people for listening. Drop us a line, will you, at thesuspendables@yahoo.com or check out our Facebook page, The Suspendables. And we're back each and every week. Rusty, next week, my boy, longtime NHL superstar Larry Robinson is going to join us. And we're a great guy. He's got stories like you do, Russ. Oh, and like you, forgot his filter in the car. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He left his filter at home. So join us next week for sure. And every other week. Look back at some of the shows. Our 50th was with Wayne Gretzky. One of the most popular was Kelly Kissio. And we had your brother on and many other people.
Kelly Chase, you mean?
Oh, Kissio. Yeah.
Kelly Kissio.
He wasn't that memorable. Wait till he hears I called him that. He'll never talk to me again. You've been listening to The Suspendables with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and longtime NHL player Russ Courtnell, an absolute superstar. Another great show, Rusty. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week on The Suspendables.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Courtnell in L.A. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.